British are going to lead a Hormuz coalition. The UK government seems to really love their coalitions, the coalition of the willing. Hormuz coalitions. So apparently they're going to lead on this effort to provide demining equipment in the Strait, along with the French and, to an extent, the Americans. Why would they suddenly be agreeing to this? And what do you think of the Allies' partners' response so far in this war?
Well, I mean, you've seen from the beginning where Keir Starmer said, you're not going to use our bases for your operations here. And then the allegations that Diego Garcia was attacked, or, and I can't remember where the other one was. And so now it's like, well, you know what? We'll provide some defensive help here, but we're not going to send any ships in. We're not going to participate in the war. Now, I hadn't seen this, so I can't comment on it directly. But now if they're thinking about doing some demining, well, look, that if the war's over, terrific, then that's useful. That can come in and help and clean those mines up, because that'll be a hard task. But you're not going to demine anything if the war is still going on, because whatever demining ship you have come in, it'll be taken under fire and sank or set on fire. So I don't know why you're thinking that's something that you want to do. It's great that you want to have this coalition, but you much need diplomacy to bring the political part of the war to an end. As you mentioned a minute ago about Clausewitz politics by other means, you got to get the other means taken care of before you can back off and get the military means off the table. Otherwise, this is just going to keep on. So whatever the Allies are thinking that they're going to do militarily, there's no doubt that they're coming under enormous pressure from Trump. They definitely want them in there, and he's been mocking them in open, Truth Social, et cetera, trying to shame them into coming in. And it sounds to me like they're trying to be a little bit pregnant. They're like, well, we'll help and have this coalition of the Hormuz or whatever it was called to make it look like we're doing something. But I promise you, Keir Starmer does not want to see a ship in the Royal Navy going to the bottom of the Persian Gulf. That won't play well at home. So I think he'll avoid that at all contexts, but he also doesn't want to make Trump angry, because they also are worrying about the Ukraine-Russia war. That's still really higher on their list. They're a lot more worried about that than I think that they were about this war of choice in the Persian Gulf. I think they feel that is a big distraction, because it is definitely having negative impacts hugely for the Russia-Ukraine war, because Russia is now much more flush with cash than they were before. And the Ukraine side is much less flush with air defense missiles, because we don't have any to give to them anymore, because we're running out of what we have. So that's having negative implications there. So the Europeans don't want to make Trump too mad, where he literally stops doing anything to help out. But it's all just chasing your tail, because none of it's going to succeed until President Trump decides to stop making choices that are bad for everybody.
But do you not think that the Europeans are not helping themselves? I'm just going to be devil's advocate, right, with this provocative question. But like, do you not just think the Europeans should be getting involved, because at the end of the day, they're too reliant on the Russians? They should help clean up the Strait of Hormuz, support Trump, get rid of the IRGC, open the channels for everybody, and then that solves energy independence and security for the globe.
Yeah, fair enough. And I would then ask the very next question, and how exactly are you going to do that? How are you going to clean up the Gulf? How are you going to get rid of the IRGC? If it was that easy, we would have already done it. But there's a reason why our Navy is not cleaning up the Strait of Hormuz, because we know militarily we can't. You can't just get rid of the IRGC. We've started this war with no ground component. You don't have an army. This is not like 2003, where we had 300,000 guys in Iraq and we could roll up the planes there heading into Baghdad and put the capital city under threat against a ground army, along with naval power and missile and air power. Now we only have missile and air power, and everybody should know who studied anything about military history or culture or people and look at recent experiences, that you're not going to bomb somebody into submission. We don't have enough bombs for that, and people are too resilient for that. I mean, look at the British in World War II, the Battle of Britain. Look at the Germans when we had tried to bomb them into submission, firebombing the Japanese. Look at the Palestinians. Look at the Ukrainians. They have been mercilessly bombed by the Russians in the air and on the ground, and they still to this day have not buckled. Why do we think that a country of 93 million people with all these great defensive capabilities and no army on our side is going to submit because they get bombed? I mean, there's just no rational reason to think that. So whatever the Europeans may be saying, whatever they may be wanting to do, I think that their military understands that. Bold words aside, and this desire to help our allies aside, they know it's a physically impossible military task. You cannot bring this to bear and to clean up the Hormuz or to get the IRGC out without an army.
Well, to be, again, devil's advocate, follow on this, I you know, like yourself, speak to a lot of varying people of perspectives, opinions, and those who are pro-Israel or from the Israeli side, IDF personnel or something like that, their argument is that we simply have to do enough physical damage to military assets, infrastructure, command and control, supply chains, because that will cause enough psychological destruction on the IRGC's front, and also mainly target their production facilities, take out their ability to retaliate and hit Israel specifically with whatever it is, missile barrages, yeah, or drone swarms. I'm still skeptical of that, because clearly the Iranians have been prepared for this. Why would they just keep all their stuff out in the open? But, or do you think there is some truth to that? If they, no, if we can, no, do enough,
that's what, this is one of the worst, almost cancers that afflicts the Western thinking these days. That's what we want to be true. And so we just say with enough gumption and enough conviction, and we just think it will become true. But any kind of sober analysis, especially of the Iranian people themselves, when they have an 8-year history to look at where they were mercilessly bombarded and lost hundreds of thousands and never did buckle the way that they're saying. And that's with an army on their border that at one point got, I think, 75 miles inside the country of Iran, and they didn't buckle. Or look at the Palestinians, or look at the Lebanese and the Hezbollah in the southern part of Lebanon, or look at the Houthis after a decade of war from Iran, I'm sorry, from Saudi Arabia, etc. Everywhere you look, and again, I'll say the British, the Germans, the Japanese, it never works. And so the idea that this time it will work when it never has before, and you can't tell me, this is the problem with those claims. They never do the operational stuff. Okay, if I blow up enough stuff, then it's going to cause them to give up. Based on what? How much stuff can you blow up? And it's say used to strike all these targets that are above ground, and as you properly mentioned here, because Iran realized what the threat is, that they have spent literal decades, plural, building these massive underground facilities, whole cities, to include the production, because they know that anything that can be seen from the air can be blown up. So they moved it all underground along with the feedstocks and everything else to keep going with production, and they've done it. And now that we're seeing the results of this, so they don't rely on external silos or on launchers that are outside that can all be found and targeted and destroyed. They use new things like with the drones, et cetera. So you're not going to bomb them into submission because you can't reach them. You don't have enough air defense capabilities to get rid of the missiles they got coming back. So all the while you're trying to find them, they're still targeting you. And the just people in the culture of Iran, they're already inured for this. They have already proven that they can't. So you've got to tell me these people are making those statements. How are you going to say that all of these other people groups throughout time over the last century or so, to include in the current phase here, why has it never worked there? And why do you suppose in a country of this size, when they're already prepared for it mentally as well as physically, that it's going to work now? And you're gambling everything on it.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, you obviously want to exercise restraint, but again, to be devil's advocate in this little back and forth is simply, then how do we ensure that Iran doesn't pose a threat, right? I'm going to take the position of Lindsey Graham. Why should we not? What was the one time you said it? Bomb the shit out of Iran? I don't advocate for that, guys. I'm role playing here. But like, why? What do we do then? Or what should the US and Israel do to ensure that Iran doesn't get a bomb, doesn't remain a systemic threat to our interests, if we're not going to do military action and boots?
Don't attack them. How many times in the history of their country have they launched an attack on another country? None. They have not. They in fact, before 20, I think it was 2024, they had never launched any kind of attack from their soil into Israel until Israel attacked their embassy in Syria and blew it up. And then in retaliation, they launched a limited strike that was intentionally old stuff, slow stuff, signaled ahead of time so that the United States and Israel would be able to shoot down nearly all the drones fired a few old missiles at places where they knew so it wouldn't hit anything. And then they said, that's it. We don't want to take this any further. We don't want a war. So we don't want to fight you. This claim by Lindsey Graham and all of his ilk that they're coming after us and all they want to do is kill Americans is completely refuted by physical evidence. The only time they have done anything against us, whether that's with the proxies or with the direct military, is only after we have attacked them. We keep saying, oh, they're going to get a bomb and they will definitely use it if they get it, is irrational and also refuted by the evidence. Because up until we assassinated Khamenei, he had a fatwa against it. And according to every intelligence assessment that's out there from 2003 forward, they did not have a nuclear program and were not going to get one. And we had inspectors up there until, again, we attacked them in 2025. So we harmed our own self. So everything that would have proven that they weren't building a bomb, we get rid of. So to answer the direct question, to be safe from Iran, stop attacking them because they just want to survive and live. We don't like their theocratic government. Fine. You don't have to like it. But they've shown that they want to be a country on their own. And I've talked to people inside their country who don't like their government, but they still are Iranians and they want to have be at peace and they want to decide on their own how their government does or doesn't work. But in terms of our security, it has been a myth from the beginning that they seek just by their nature to come and attack us because they never have, but we have attacked them in so many ways. Trump assassinated Soleimani. Trump got out of the 2018 JCPOA. The Israelis attacked their embassy, which was an act of war in any context ever in the world, and yet no one said a word to what the Israelis did. And then they assassinated somebody in their capital city during a presidential inauguration. I mean, everything you can to prompt his reaction, and every time they reacted was constrained. Even in the 12-day war last year, their reaction was constrained. They went after a limited set of targets, and they said that we want to end this. And so when given an opportunity to have the off-ramp that both the U.S. and Israel desperately needed after 12 days, they accepted that and said that'll be the end of it. We won't go any further, and they didn't until we started another war of choice. So if you're taking the emotions out of it and taking the hubris of any particular side and just look at the evidence, it's never been the Iranians that have threatened anybody else. So there's no reason to think that they're going to do that in the future. Now, I will tell you a caveat here. My big worry here, which has been all the way through, which I was so adamantly opposed to any kind of wars of choice, is that we may have started a countdown here now that we've claimed we want to prevent them from having a bomb all these years. With this war, we may have pushed them into running to get a bomb. They may be doing it right now. We have no way of knowing if that's what they're doing or not. And we may be surprised one day when they just announce they have a nuclear warhead or there's a nuclear test underground or something like that. I fear that that's coming because almost nothing else makes any sense. They see that the only way they can deter us is to have a nuclear deterrence of their own. So I fear that it may already be too late. I hope it's not, but I fear that it is.
I certainly agree with you in that last point. The Iranians are, what else does a regime do? Does an autocratic system do when its back is up against the wall? Iran has never looked weaker than it has in the past. Well, not just 8 months since this 12-day war, but since October 7th and the whole subsequent developments, you know, the systematic sort of dismantling of their proxy network. But on that point, though, Colonel, do you not think that it's a bit unwise to say that the Iranians have never done anything? Like, their proxies certainly have.
I definitely didn't say they haven't done anything. I said that they have not initiated anything. Even the proxies have been in a place that to push back on the attacks that were happening with them. I mean, look at the big claim that everybody says all the time that, look, they have killed 600 Americans is what it is, because they were helping during the 2005 war. They were helping the Iraqi Shia militia inside there with the EFPs, those special kinds of things and roadside bombs that can penetrate through our armor. And everybody focuses on that, said, yeah, that's right. Well, what caused that? What prompted that? How about the 8-year war that we supported, the killing of Iranians by the Iraqi side? See, we always forget about that part. That came first. And so then we were also killing their regional allies in there during that war. We were killing the Shia. And so they were asking for help from their bigger partner. that our attacks against the Shia came first. So I keep going back is that they've done stuff, but only in response to what we have done. So if we want to stop that, then let's stop doing it first and defend ourselves. Nobody's saying trust anybody. Don't take their word for anything. Defend ourselves and stop attacking, which prompts a counterattack.
Okay, interesting. I mean, again, I still feel, though, can we make this broader point about the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians? They have this desire to want to interfere, even if it's clandestine, covertly, right? The Russians do interfere in European elections, but would you argue that's because of Western provocations over NATO expansion or something? I'm not trying to open this can of worms, but could you apply that same point you're making to other countries that have a similar sort of opinion of Western policy, like the Iranians, like the Russians, for example?
Well, let's take the Russians since you brought them up. I mean, let's look at the end of the Cold War, right? The end of the Cold War, the Warsaw Pact disbanded, the Soviet Union disbanded, NATO expanded. They didn't disband, they expanded. And Russia say, wait, what are you expanding for? The whole thing that we had with the Warsaw Pact and the USSR, we went away. So what are you expanding against? And they say, well, it's not you. Okay, well, then what? But they kept doing it. And they said, okay, 2007, don't go any further. Definitely don't go into Ukraine and Georgia. And we said, yeah, we're going to go into Ukraine and Georgia. So we kept ignoring what they said, and we kept going further with a military alliance, et cetera. You see this same pattern. We keep going at them, and then anything they do in reaction, we say, I told you, see, that's why we're doing this, because they had a reaction, even though even the talk of China being in our hemisphere in a Venezuela caused us to, at least we claimed, go in and take over in Venezuela to keep China out of our hemisphere. Meanwhile, we have all kinds of bases right on the periphery of China. We have ships that patrol the so-called freedom of navigation right up to their territorial waters. We have airplanes and reconnaissance that are flying right up to their airspace to do all kind of reconnaissance. We are going crazy because they're in our hemisphere business-wise, and yet we have no problem having our military up to their gates. We keep pushing against both of these folks, and every time they do anything in retaliation, we say it's them wanting to mess with us. But we always seem to be starting it. And if we're being honest, we can see that pattern playing out in every one of these cases we're talking about.
Interesting. Well, I think I found the next thing I'd love to have you back on to have a chat about is Russia, Ukraine and everything. But the one thing I'd say to that, and then I've got two more questions for you, is simply...
Okay,
you
know, I'm going to have to roll. I've got another appointment, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. No, just I think it's a case of the NATO expansion, but you know, it's a voluntary alliance and countries wanted to join it, but I'll leave that there hanging and we can bring it out next time. My penultimate question is just simply, Lebanon looks like it's going to be the main flashpoint now. If the Americans were to draw down with the Iranians, what do you think could happen in Lebanon with Israel and a potential ground offensive?
Well, I don't think it's potential. I think they're involved with it already. Apparently, there's lots of clashes in southern Lebanon where they're trying to push up to the Litani River. They've blown a lot of the bridges over the Litani River. They've sent out notices. They've got ground operations in there. So, I mean, it seems to me that they're already expanding. Some call it Greater Israel. I don't know what they call it. They've obviously taken a lot of territory in Syria. On top of that, they're still doing annexations in the West Bank. And we still have, you know, no resolution to the Gaza Strip. So right now it looks like Israel wants to continue on all these fronts. But that's something that they've got to deal with. That's something that Lebanon has to deal with. It's not something America should support. In fact, I think it's opposite our national interest, but they're an independent country. They can do whatever they want to do. I just don't think I think that they have bit off way, way more than they can chew. And unless America stays decisively engaged militarily, and I'm talking with supplies as well as diplomatic cover, Israel can't succeed on all these fronts at the same time. And that's hoping that the Houthis don't kick back up again, which they have threatened that they may do. You just can't choose wars on all these fronts because of what happened on 10/7, and somehow thinking that's going to help you out because you've overstretched yourselves, and so now by creating all these additional enemies, by all these attacks, and so many people that have been killed, and so much have been destroyed, I fear that the understandable reaction after 10/7/2023, that the terrorist attack that Israel suffered, they had every right to respond and an obligation to respond, but they went too far. And in so doing, they did not provide security for their country, but they actually created more enemies. And I watched this through my deployments in the Middle East, in Afghanistan and Iraq. We did the same thing. They just did it on a much bigger scale. And I think that they're going to be paying for this for a long time to come.
Mm. So my last question is simply, if you were in the room, this is a question I saw in the comments. So people, if they do have comments in the future, do always write them down, which is simply, what would you advise? What would you be saying to the Trump administration in this situation? We need to get the hell out. And if so, how? And how do we do that in a way that doesn't make it look incredibly embarrassing? Or what would you say without my loading comment?
No, that's fair. That is a right. That's a totally fair question, because we are in it. So it doesn't matter whether we should have been. I, of course, was lobbying heavily in the month before, don't do this thing, because so many of these problems we have were predictable. But we did. We chose to have this war. Now the question is, how do we reasonably get out of it? There is no way to get out of it without embarrassment. That doesn't exist. There's not a good way out. Now then, it's going to be bad, because we have crossed a Rubicon by giving Iran their, if not motivation, the near requirement to respond by taking the only leverage they could get by taking control of the Gulf of Hormuz. They now have a demonstrated capability that if anything happens in the future, they can do the same thing again. And now there's been precedent set. So that's going to cause some friction in the region for a long time to come. And if under any circumstances the United States withdraws from this militarily, and the current Islamic regime that was in charge under the Ayatollah is still in charge on the backside of this, so many in both Israel and a whole slew of people in the United States will say, oh, this was a terrible mistake. This, you've shown weakness and all this kind of stuff. Here's the thing that we need to understand. There is no military solution to this. Ergo, Trump can't say, well, let's double down on it. Let's do something more. Let's bring some more firepower in, and that will give us a win, because it's not going to. Therefore, the only logical thing you can do is eat whatever crow, eat whatever humble pie you need to, and get out of here with the least damage done now. You can't get out without some damage done, because we baked it in by the attack itself. By choosing this war, there's no good way out to come out of this. So Iran is going to come out stronger than they were, no matter how many bombs they've eaten, no matter how many people have been killed. They will come out of this stronger than they were before, because now they're in a more dominant position and they have more leverage that they didn't have before. Now then they do. So the President Trump should under no circumstances make this worse by trying a ground operation of any kind, because we don't have the resources to even theoretically bring them to their knees. All we can do is lose more troops and make the matters worse. So what we should do then, don't do that, and instead come up with whatever face-saving way you want to try to do. And in a worst-case scenario, say, all right, well, we've harmed you enough, and we've caused enough damage to your Navy, to your Air Force. We're now going to withdraw, and we're going to stop fighting, and you do whatever you want to do. But if you attack again, we're going to come back, you know, something like that. And then we could walk away. And then that leaves it up to Iran. They may not like it. Then they're probably not going to, quote, give up control of that strait. And that is the problem, is that even the so-called taco that Trump is sometimes alleged to do it, even if he tries to do what I just suggested there, the Iranian side may say, not good enough. We want some security guarantees, and we want reparations, or we're going to keep hold of the strait, and we're still not going to let any of your people go through. And anybody that does is going to pay in Chinese yuan. So if you want to change that, then you're going to need to eat a lot of humble pie. I don't see a good way out of this at this point. I just see a lot of worse ways to deepen our problems.
Quite the precarious point to end on there, Colonel Daniel Davis, but that means we'll just have to have you back for another live stream. Thank you so much for your time today. Everyone watching, if you enjoyed it, then do obviously subscribe to myself and the Colonel's channels if you haven't already, and be sure to join us next time when we talk about this, hopefully in a much better position. But we'll see you soon. Take care.
I love it. Thanks. See you.